That was fantastic. Now we have such a good feeling for our new opening song. It's a new band to me. I was not familiar with them, so I was super excited that Michael found them. And Hillsong is the band. Well, a happy new year, y'all. All y'all. As Dave mentioned in his reading, it's a tradition for many of us to go back to the basics, to come back to this beautiful teaching and the ideas of this philosophy, and just check in. And as I've mentioned in previous years, and so I'll repeat myself today, it's an opportunity to check in with ourselves and consider, how is this philosophy, this way of living, showing up in my life? How am I being changed by it? That's the idea, right? That we understand it and embody it and embrace it in such a way that we are lifted up in the way that we live. So in the text, the great and holy text. I don't mean that facetiously. Ernest Holmes writes, "These lessons are dedicated to that truth, capital T truth, which frees man from himself and sets him on the pathway of a new experience, which enables him to see through the mist to the eternal and changeless reality." So my hope, I use the word mindfully, my intention, I use the word mindfully, is that we are each being lifted up, that we are each allowing ourselves to be moved by the presence and allowing our life to be transformed. He continues, "These truths are not personal. They do not belong to any one person or persons. They are available to any and all who wish to know, understand, and experience them. They do not change. But our understanding will, and in that understanding, they seem to change." It's an ongoing joke in many, many conversations that Ernest Holmes' brother would come downstairs every morning, he'd read the book, and he'd say, "Gosh, how did he do that? He rewrote it again while I was sleeping?" No, every time we come to the truth and we know it in a greater way, we are transformed. It might appear that the words are changed, but really it is the idea that continues to evolve in us. "We are told to be renewed in mind by spirit and to put on the new man, which is created in true holiness. The science of mind teaches. The mind is the creative factor within us, and when the mind takes its pattern after the spirit, it automatically renews the outer man after true holiness and wholeness." Sounds like we're in the right place, eh? Each week as we light these candles that represent the flames of faith, the sum of the many paths to God, we're invited to let that last candle represent the path that brought us here. And again, that's intentional, that we recognize and we honor all of the many paths, but each one of us is walking out that which is ours, that which called us to come to this time, to this place, to this teaching, to this philosophy, to this spiritual community, so that we may know that presence in a greater way. And I love it that each of us are on our own path and that we have chosen, and maybe more accurately, we have agreed to the path that includes us being here together. Little bit of trivia, our spiritual community will celebrate 60 years this year. Yeah, right? 60 years of people coming together in spiritual community here. Now, there are many spiritual communities all over the world, all over the planet, and there are all types of shapes and sizes and ideas and ways that they happen. And yet this divine idea that is the Huntington Beach Center for Spiritual Living continues to live and evolve and change and be transformed over and over again because of the life of us. Because we are each individually coming together and doing this together. So while everyone has stepped onto the path in their own way, it would not be fun for me if I didn't have people to do it with, to share that path with. And I was thinking about this, and sometimes people find themselves on a spiritual path because we followed our parents. Anybody else? I followed my parents. Or a friend led us to the place that we ended up. Sometimes it's a crisis. Sometimes it's an inspiration. It's worth our attention to pay attention to the path that brought us to where we are today and to recognize the twists and the turns and the moments that we have experienced. So again, in what Ernest Holmes referred to as the textbook, and the reason that he referred to it as the textbook, and we continue to use that language, is that there are great lessons here. He uses a lot of words, to describe and talk about and offer ideas of truth, ideas of living. And those first four chapters that were added as an afterthought, the thing itself, the way it works, what it does and how to use it, we could just use those prompts all year long, every day. The thing itself. What does that mean to me today? How is that showing up? What is the way that it's working in my life? How is it working? Am I allowing it to work, or am I telling it what to do? Am I remembering to let God do its job, or am I telling God how to do its job? Y'all don't do that, right? What it does, how to use it. They're just such beautiful prompts for us. And another little jewel that I thought I would share with you, in case you're not familiar with it, is how to speak science of mind. Look, it's so little. Filled with great ideas. Pop it open. The topic is intuition. Do all people have intuition? And if so, how can it be accessed? Are you curious? Get the book. The path is revealed before us all the time. It's unfolding before us. It is it's a reference. It's a guide. It's a toolkit to living the spiritual principles in our life. So in The Science of Mind, Ernest Holmes wrote on page 51, "One of the great difficulties in the new order of thought is that we are likely to indulge in too much theory and too little practice. As a matter of fact, we only know as much as we can prove by actual demonstration. That which we cannot prove may or may not be true. That which we can prove certainly must be and is the truth." So again, we're invited to consider how it is that we're proving these principles, these universal spiritual principles that Ernest Holmes did not make up. He's very clear about it. He didn't make it up. He took divine ideas and said, here, let's explore these. How do these live in our life? How do we embody and articulate and know these in a greater way? So I was thinking about this, and I had this beautiful inspiration. I know you'll agree. And I thought about the different people in my life that I think are articulate and have a great experience of living these spiritual principles. So I invited Dave Cafaro to share with us a little bit. Please come up. Michael, can he use your microphone?
Yes, he can.
We'll call it Michael's microphone from now on, forevermore. Thank you, Michael. Michael's mic. So we didn't plot this out too much. We just agreed that we would do this.
Yeah, thanks for that.
Use the mic.
Yes, thanks for that.
You're welcome. So many times what I find is that I'm articulating something that is alive within me, and then I talk with someone, and then they articulate it, and then it is more alive in me. Anybody else ever experienced this? Yes. So we're just going to have this conversation. And one of the things that I appreciate about Dave is that he grew up in this teaching, in this philosophy. So I'm going to zip it, and I'm just going to ask you to just share just a little bit about your experience of growing up, and then we're going to take it from there. Okay. Just see how far it goes.
So I consider myself fortunate. My brother and I both were raised in a family that practiced the principles. Our mom was a practitioner, and so that was good, and that was also a challenge because we couldn't get away with any excuses or blaming anyone for anything. We own full responsibility for everything. Do you concur, Jeffrey? So, but it was truly a blessing, and so we learned the principles at an early age. But what I've learned over time is, first of all, like most kids, I questioned what my parents said and what they believed, and challenged it, and explored other philosophies, other religions at one point in time, and found my way back to this because it worked. But one of the things that I really took hold in my life early on was what Ernest said about, don't take my word for this. Test it. Prove it. It's a science. And so being kind of analytical, I thought, well, if it's a science, it's got to work, and it's always got to work. So that's something that really, I think, came from that upbringing, but gave me an opportunity to continually test and experience and see, does this really work, or is it just philosophy?
Thank you. Yeah. So one of the things that in our sharing and talking with each other that you've shared with me is your approach to your business world, and that it's not really separate. So I remember raising my children and us having this conversation, well, there's church and then there's school, or there's church and then there's this. And it felt very divided. Over time, I think that improved. But can you share about that a little bit, about your experience of that?
Yeah, so what I will say, that when I sort of got past the division of my spiritual philosophy and life, was when I was a teenager and I had a health condition that was pretty serious. It was serious enough it kept me out of school in 11th grade. I ended up not going back to 11th grade, taking the GED to get out of high school because I couldn't go to school. And one of the best things that happened out of the condition was my parents encouraged me to take the fundamentals class, and I'd never taken it before, and I really sort of grasped on to that philosophy of test it, see if it really works. And what I learned there was the condition is separate from me, right? I'm not the condition. The condition is a separate thing, and sort of recognizing that. Sort of fast forward to that, that's when I said, this isn't just a separate thing, it's who I am, it's what I do, and when I sort of really made it part of my life. As it applies to business, our teaching symbol is the thing that's guided me through. I studied strategic management in graduate school and found so many similarities between our principles and principles of strategic management. And so I've used that teaching symbol throughout my career, whether I worked for someone else, for a big company, for a small company, for myself, for nonprofits, to sort of guide me. So the symbol, if you're not familiar with it, the top part of it is spirit. It's the word. It's how we put the word into action, right? So it always starts with the word. The second part of it, that second level is the law. So we speak our word into the law, and then law acts on it. And then at the bottom is the experience, the manifestation. So what I translate that to in business, and to really every job I've had, is it always starts with the word. And so in business, I translate that to how do we define success for whatever it is we're doing, whether it's for the company or for a project or something, and always start out with what's the word? What's the definition of success? And letting that work through. So that's guided me in my business and career.
And you actually shared with me that you use the 5 steps of treatment in an article that you wrote. Can you share a little bit about that?
So part of my consulting work focuses on helping people navigate change, helping leaders in organizations navigate change. And this article that I write for a publication called Smart Brief on Leadership, and it was, I called the article Mind Over Change Matter. But the idea behind it was that in order to really effectively navigate change, you've got to start with a new picture, a new vision, right? The word.
And so, let me just interrupt you. Anybody, you know, it's the first of the year. Thank you for letting me. And anybody else planning on a change in your life? And then, you know, setting something up? Okay, keep going.
Okay. Anyway, so when I sort of described the challenge that we get locked into mindsets in organizations, and you've got to see a new picture. And so I offered some suggestions on how to navigate that, and I just took the 5 steps of treatment. So we start out with recognition that God is all. I didn't say this in the article. This was a business article. But I started out with those steps. So recognition, and the second one for us is unification. So what I wrote in the article was about unifying with the word or the vision or the definition of success. And then work through the next steps. Declaration, what is it that I want? What's the future state? And then going from there. So it worked pretty well.
And what a beautiful way to take the divine idea that is a spiritual mind treatment and apply it in your life. Not like separate, but the same. It's one life, God's life. It's living through us. And if we can take those ideas, not just the words, not just remember the words of Ernest Holmes or Dave Cafaro or Patty or whomever, but if we can take those ideas and then let them become alive in our life in the words and the language that works for us. Yeah? Yeah. Good. All right. So what would you say, what would you offer to any of us as a practice to that you might use yourself or observe that we could all benefit from in this congruence in our life?
So I'll speak from where I am right now. One of the things that I learned and really worked on in practitioner school is the concept that it's all God. And even though I'd heard those words a billion times in my life, saying everything, every experience, every condition is God, that takes work. So I'm speaking to myself now. Mm-hmm. But the more I can remind myself that everything, even the experiences I don't like, I didn't want, that came about, it's still God, I think is a really good way to reanchor myself in the philosophy that it is all God. And that means if we practice that, we can't say except for that or except for that person or except for that situation. It's all God.
Ha. Huh. Thank you. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Great. Brilliant. It's all God. Your teacher would be so proud of you.
Would you tell her, please?
I will. Janet, well done. As far as religions go, ours is a baby. It's a baby established in the 20th century by a man who was curious and determined to know and understand what so many of the best thinkers and teachers of all time were professing. He listened to the words and he went to the idea and said, I want to understand this idea in a greater way, which is what Dave is speaking about. In a talk at the Founders Church in Los Angeles, Ernest Holmes said this: "The man who knows only one religion might be a good theologian, but he wouldn't know anything about religion." Religion is a man's turning toward God. Religion is an intuition like art. It's a feeling toward the invisible that we all have, and we have to search the teachings, precepts, and words of the greatest spiritual thinkers and teachers who have ever lived to understand. And this is what we are doing in this faith that we call religious science, the practice that we call the science of mind. And Ernest Holmes, he lived by these words, and he offered them to us. Borrow. Borrow from the one who knows, and know it for oneself. Everyone may use all the tools that there are in the universe, and each one use all to the fullest extent and never exhaust it. Sometimes Ernest Holmes' words are hard to follow, but the idea, it's really not about the words. We should not let ourselves get lost in the words, but the idea. So there's these beautiful things that are spoken out in the universe, in the world of truth and wholeness and oneness and goodness, and the way that it's being made known and expressed through each of us and is individual. But we don't want to be too concerned with the word, the way it's spoken, but instead the idea. One of our resources in understanding this teaching, this philosophy, and the way Ernest Holmes thought was to use our resource, the Science of Mind Archives. Just a little shout out and a plug for it. You can Google it, Science of Mind Archives, and you will have access to an enormous amount of information. When I was in the archives this week, virtually, there were a couple little bullet points that I thought were really fascinating. From Emerson, Ralph Waldo Emerson would be the Emerson we're referring to, Holmes embodied these three ideas. We are our own spiritual authority. There is a godlike essence in every person. There is some kind of connection between our thoughts and what happens to us. Those ideas are the ideas that we want to continuously find ourselves talking about, living, experiencing, expressing, so that we may know that connection in a greater way. From Troward, Judge Thomas Troward, Ernest Holmes became convinced there is an impersonal law of the universe that is creative. There is an impersonal law of the universe that is creative. Just that idea. What is this law? How does it create? And it's impersonal. Patty said that earlier. It's not personal, but it expresses personally through us. How do we get to know that in a greater way? We create our own dungeons or destiny by using the same creative power that created the universe. Wow, that's heady. That's big. It's a lot. We can use this God power within us consciously to change our life for the better. These are just a couple of the things that Ernest Holmes, those ideas that he took from someone, from somewhere, and articulated into the many volumes and books and the ideas that he presented in all of those talks, always finding a way to language the idea that was growing and evolving within him. Have our lives changed since last year? Yes. Have they changed since last week when we were together? Yes. Have they changed since we came in the doors? Yes. To varying degrees, yeah? To varying degrees. And what happens is every time we are brought together with someone else and we have the privilege of sharing our understanding of life, of sharing our experience of life, of sharing our connection with life, we do that thing. We articulate the divine idea that is alive within us. When we can articulate it with someone, then it comes alive. We get to hear ourselves and we get to say, oh, huh, I'm talking to myself again. And then we, instead of becoming more divisive with people out there, we can become more inclusive with the people in our lives. We can become more available to those divine ideas that are occurring and allow them to express through us and in us and as us. So, in closing, I want to share with you an excerpt from The Essential Earnest. The way to proceed is to begin right where we are. It is not scientific to attempt to begin somewhere else. One who understands the systematic use of the law will understand that he is where he is because of what he is. But he will not say, I must remain where I am because of what I am. Instead, he will begin to disclaim what he appears to be. As his statements release wrong subjective tendencies, providing in their place a correct concept of life and reality, he will automatically be lifted. Impelling forces sweeping everything before them will set him free if he trusts in spirit and the working of the law. So, Reverend Donna's class is beyond limits. She'll be exploring a lot of the ideas. Even if you've taken the class before, even if you've taken 100 classes, and if you have, I want to know you because I could learn from you. Every time we revisit these ideas in class or in community, they grow within us. And what I desire for us is that we are able to articulate these in our life in greater and greater ways. In this beautiful book, Ernest Holmes shared many different meditations, and he called them meditations for self-help. That means we can use these meditations to help ourselves. They're free and available to anyone who picks it up. They're free and available to anyone who picks this up. The one that I chose for us to start off our year is a beautiful one. It's found in the text, but I printed many copies. There's enough for everyone. I'm just going to share it with you. It's called, I Shall Keep the Promise. I shall keep the promise that I have made to myself. I shall never again tell myself that I am poor, sick, weak, nor unhappy. I shall not lie to myself anymore, but shall daily speak the truth to my inner soul, telling it that it is wonderful and marvelous, that it is one with the great cause of all life, truth, power, and action. I shall whisper these things into my soul until it breaks forth into songs of joy with the realization of its limitless possibilities. So my invitation is that we take this meditation, we make it our own. I shall keep the promise that I've made to myself. What's the promise that I'm making to myself today? Fill it in. You don't have to use his words. But what is that promise to myself that I am making, and how am I committing to it? I shall never again. What? What shall I never again do? I shall never again look upon my beloved and see them as poor, sick, weak, or unhappy. When we make the idea ours, the words flow forth easily. Sometimes they feel a little awkward, but it's because we haven't yet articulated that divine idea that's upon our heart. I am encouraging us to do that this year, a little bit more, maybe a lot more, to take those divine ideas of the science of mind, of this spiritual philosophy, and make it our own in greater and greater ways. So may your promise to yourself establish and reestablish with a greater awareness within yourself your connection with life, the divinity of God within you. It is God in action, expressing in you and through you and as you. This is the truth that I know. It is my prayer upon my heart that we live it, we experience, and we express it in greater and greater ways. Thank you, Dave, for sharing your love and your light. Thank you all for being here and sharing your love and your light. It is what makes us so. I let it be, and so it is. All right.